playwright and screenwriter Horton Foote won his first Academy Award in 1962 for his adaptation of To Kill a Mockingbird. 21 years later, he won his second Academy Award for his screenplay Tender Mercies. Actress Geraldine Page received an Oscar for her performance in Foote's movie A Trip to Bountiful. Public television's American Playhouse has presented several of the plays in Foote's 9-part Orphan's Home cycle. Grove Press has just published a second volume of plays in the cycle. Horton Foote considers memory an unreliable thing, but much of his writing is based on his memories of growing up in the small town of Wharton, Texas. Fictionalized versions of that town have been the settings for most of his stories. A Trip to Bountiful was about an elderly woman who was forced to leave such a town when her son got a job in Houston. Her fantasy was to leave Houston and return to her old home in Bountiful, but when she summoned up the strength to leave her son, she found that Bountiful virtually no longer existed. The houses were boarded up. The day before she arrived, the last resident of Bountiful had died. All she could do was take one last look at her home.
That's all I want, just to see it. Just to stand on the porch of my own house again.
Lady, I don't have anything
to... I thought last night that I had to stay. I thought I would just die if I couldn't stay. But now, I'll settle for less. An hour. Half an hour.
Horton Foote, I want to welcome you to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
And to start our interview, I'd actually like to ask you to read something from your new book of plays, something from the introduction that you wrote about change in your life.
All right, be happy to. Change was an early acquaintance in my life. My grandfather, who seemed impervious to all mortal ends, died when I was 9. And the reverberations and changes from that death continued for many years. It was soon after that I was to see a quiet, serene street in front of my grandparents' house begin its slow but steady descent into a metaphor for all the ugly, trashy highways that scar a great deal of small-town America. And these plays, I feel, are about change, unexpected, unasked for, unwanted, but to be faced and dealt with, or else we sink into despair or a hopeless longing for a life that's gone.
Well, I think that theme of change is not only apparent in the cycle of plays that has just been published, but also it's apparent in several of your movies, such as A Trip to Bountiful. And I'm wondering what kind of changes you've had to deal with in your life that has made the idea of coping with change such a potent one in your writing.
Well, I think anybody has to deal with change because life is constantly changing, and the perceptions that you have or that you try to hold on to when you're young, so many things. I mean, people move away, and houses are sold, and people die, and new life comes into focus, and there are cycles of drought and cycles of too much rain. There is the unexpected is always there, and I think you really have to kind of find yourself not thrown by this and take life as it is, each moment as best you can.
A Trip to Bountiful is about trying to return to the past and realizing that the past is always out of reach and that you can't really get back there. And you write in the introduction to your new plays that your first memory was of stories about the past.
Yes.
But that it didn't take you long for you to learn that the past was gone and nothing could be done about it. And I wonder if there was a turning point in your realization of that, just as there was for the character in A Trip to Bountiful.
Well, I learned that lesson very early because I was raised on stories of... I'm a Southerner, and my family... have been in the area that I was born in for many, many years. And as I was growing up, I was told of all the things that the family had had and were lost and never to be gotten back. And so I soon learned that you had to give that up. I mean, so many of my family spent their lives in regretting that and being defeated by it. But I soon learned that that's death.
Do you ever feel that some of your plays are misunderstood and that people think that your plays are about returning to the past instead of learning to give it up?
They think they're nostalgic, mm-hmm. and they're not at all. I mean, I have a certain desire to be fair to the past and as exact as I can be about the past, even a past that I've only heard about orally and haven't really lived through, because so many of my plays are based on stories that were passed down to me by other people. But I certainly think there are certain values in the past that we would be foolish to ignore and not to cherish and not to try to learn from. But I have no desire. I was thinking this morning, every day you read, "What a terrible age we live in." Well, I've heard that all my life.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think any age is really any worse. They're just new problems, is all, and different problems.
You know, I have to ask you one thing about Geraldine Page's performance in the film A Trip to Bountiful. She won an Academy Award for her performance in that. She acts very girlish, although she's an old woman in it. But she has these girlish, almost flirtatious mannerisms.
Like a coquette.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you scripted that in, if that was part of your stage directions.
No. I don't do that for actors or actresses. Actually, you know, the part was originally created by Lillian Gish almost 30 years ago now. And, you can't imagine two more different talents than Lillian Gish or Geraldine Page. And both in their own way were extraordinary in the part. And I learned a great lesson from that. It's like if you have two great virtuosos, two violinists, you know, playing your music, you just are grateful for the differences. You don't try to make them the same. And I never do that for an actress.
Playwright and screenwriter Horton Foote is my guest, and he's won two Academy Awards for his screenplays, for Tender Mercies and also for To Kill a Mockingbird, plus he wrote A Trip to Bountiful. Now, describe the place in Texas where you grew up, the place that was home to you when you were young.
Well, it's still home. I still have a house there, and I've been there for since Christmas. I just came back here about 2 weeks ago.
Here being New York.
New York, yes. Well, when I grew up, it was about 3,500, and I suppose over half of those were blacks. Mm-hmm. And now it's maybe a town of about 10,000 and a little bit more suburban. The town itself, what we knew as the town, it's like all at least southern towns that I know, is disappearing, and there are shopping malls creeping out into the country. And, you know, houses are torn down, and...
It's great. This is the exact opposite of what happens to the character in A Trip to Bountiful. She goes home and finds out that home doesn't exist anymore. It's become a ghost town.
That's right.
You go home, and there's shopping malls.
That's right. It's in that transformation that's going on all over America.
Now, a lot of people, once they become teenagers, are very restless and want to get away from home, especially if they've been brought up in a small town. But I think even a lot of people in big cities, they just want to make a break and start a new life for themselves as an adult. Did you go through a period of restlessness where, as absorbed as you are with your hometown now, did you want to go through a period of wanting to get away?
Not so much getting away from my hometown, but simply for a pragmatic reason. I wanted to be an actor.
Oh.
And I knew I couldn't be.
This is before you started writing.
That's right. I knew there was no future in that in Wharton, except, you know, the little theater, and that I had exhausted that. So, there was no place to go for me unless, you know, I wanted to do something and had no idea I wanted to write. And perhaps just as well, because I think that my writing is helped by distance. In other words, I don't write too much about my town or my people. When I'm there, I'm too busy looking and watching and listening. And really, I do most of my writing. I keep journals and I work on other things, you know. But I do most of my writing of my plays when there's some distance between us.
Now, you bought the house that you grew up in, right?
That's right.
Who lives in it now?
I do.
I see. So when you go home, you're literally going home.
That's right. Yes, I'm going home. That's right. I not only bought that house, but I just bought the house next door. Because the house I grew up in it has very large rooms, but like a lot of southern houses, it only had two bedrooms. And I have four children, so if I wanted to entice my children down there, I had to get more space.
I understand. Let's talk about Tender Mercies, the screenplay that you won an Academy Award for a few years ago. Now, Robert Duvall starred as a country and western songwriter and singer whose career derails because of alcoholism. And as he's trying to get sober, he falls in love with a young, very humble widow and moves in with her and her son. Why don't we hear a clip from that movie?
I don't know if I was what you call rich, but I had a few dollars.
How'd you get it?
Writing songs.
And how'd you get my flat?
Yeah, people are crazy enough to pay you for it. They do it.
What happened to your money?
I lost it.
How?
How? Too much Applejack.
You think you'll ever be rich again?
Well, I'll tell you what, Sonny, I don't lay awake nights worrying about it. No. Now, look, there's a D, right? D is in dog. Now, watch me. I'll call him out. I've decided to leave G here forever. Not really. Let me know if you're staying behind. It's A7.
What did you relate to about that character that you created for Tender Mercies?
I'd known, actually, I model all my characters, really, I take aspects of different people and kind of create a whole new person. And I really took as my model people I'd known in the theater. I didn't really know a lot about country western singing or singers. But I had known many people in the theater who were stars or near stars, who had been defeated in some measure by alcoholism, and once in a while they had defeated that and found a way to continue. So that really was kind of in my mind all the time I was creating Max Sledge.
Now, you had a hiatus in your career. It was hardly for the reasons Max Sledge did, the Robert Duvall character, but you kind of retired from playwriting for a while, at least from public vision.
Well, that's right. That's kind of a misapprehension. I really didn't retire from playwriting. I simply kind of went off into a quieter part of the world. I had a house in New Hampshire, and with my family, we lived out in the woods almost, but actually I was doing a great deal of writing. I was writing all the 9 plays that the first volume has just been, that you talked about, was published while I was there, and I wrote a couple of other plays, and then I began thinking about Tender Mercies while I was there. So it really was a very active time for me. I just kind of kept quiet and kept them all to myself.
Did you want to keep quiet, or had things dried up for you?
Well, nothing. I think that perhaps what had happened was that I was an interested observer in the behavior of the 60s and part of the 70s, and certainly didn't censor it, and again was interested in all that was going on, but I really didn't feel a great part of it, and felt that that was not a kind of an aesthetic, an adjustment that I wanted to make. And I didn't feel that what I was working on at that time would be of particular interest to the things that were, the people that were interested in the other things. So I just, thought, well, I write really to do the best work I can, and if people like it or want it, that's fine. If they don't, I can't help it.
Do you feel that Tender Mercies got you, helped you to reach a new level of recognition?
Well, it certainly was, it certainly did. I there's always been a kind of a small base here in New York that have been, kind to me and have been supportive. And I was doing, when I first came back before Tender Mercies, I went down to the HB Playwright Studio, which is on Bank Street, which Herbert Berghoff runs. And I did some plays there, and kind of got my feet wet again. And then Tender Mercies certainly became, more national recognition, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk more, but first we're going to have to take a short break. My guest is playwright and screenwriter Horton Foote. He's speaking to us from the NPR Bureau in New York. He won Academy Awards for his screenplays for To Kill a Mockingbird and Tender Mercies. He also wrote A Trip to Bountiful. Grove Press has just published four more plays from Foote's nine-play series, The Orphan's Home Cycle. Three of the plays were produced for PBS's American Playhouse last year, and there are plans to eventually produce all nine of those plays. We'll be back in just a few seconds. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Horton Foote is my guest. You know, we were just talking about Tender Mercies. Now, that starred Robert Duvall, who you had first worked with on To Kill a Mockingbird, which you also wrote an Academy, won an Academy Award for. Now, the way I understand it, you actually suggested that Duvall be in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, really what literally happened was that he was in a play of mine at the Neighborhood Playhouse. He was studying there.
Mm-hmm.
And Sandra Meisner, who was his teacher, asked me to come down and to watch a performance of the play. And I brought Robert Mulligan, who later was to direct Mockingbird, and myself and my wife and Kim Stanley. And we went down to see this play and this extraordinary performance by this young man. So when we were casting Mockingbird, really it was my wife that suggested to me that Duvall do it, and I called up Mulligan, and he'd already seen him, so he was very much in agreement.
So you've kept in touch with Duvall over the years?
Oh, yeah, we're very close. I talked to him yesterday, as a matter of fact.
You're working on a new project together?
Yes, we are. We start shooting a play. One of the four plays in the Grove edition,
mm-hmm.
Convicts. We start that in December.
Will that be for a screen or for PBS?
For the screen.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well, you know, you won an Academy Award for To Kill a Mockingbird. I want to play just a very short scene from it. The film starred Gregory Peck, and here he is.
How old were you when you got your first gun, Atticus?
13 or 14. I remember when my daddy gave me that gun. He told me that I should never point at anything in the house, and that he'd rather I'd shoot at tin cans in the backyard. But he said that sooner or later he supposed the temptation to go after birds would be too much. And that I could shoot all of the blue jays I wanted if I could hit them. But to remember, it was a sin to kill a mockingbird.
Why?
Well, I reckon because mockingbirds don't do anything but make music for us to enjoy. Don't need people's gardens. Don't nest in the corn cribs. They don't do one thing but just sing their hearts out for us.
Now, the screenplay you wrote was an adaptation from a novel?
Mm-hmm, by Harper Lee.
Well, how did you feel about doing an adaptation and winning an Academy Award for it? Did you like doing... You did a lot of adaptations. You adapted Faulkner for Playhouse 90.
I did a lot. Not a lot. I've done... Well, let me see. I did Faulkner. I did Harper Lee. I did Flannery O'Connor,
mm-hmm.
which is not bad. I mean, if you're going to adapt, that's the kind of things you should adapt.
Was it fulfilling work to do adaptations?
Well, it's difficult work. It's not work that I relish because it's painful. Because you know, it's first of all, there's an enormous responsibility to a fellow artist, and secondly, it's painful to try to get into somebody else's psyche, you know, and to put on somebody else's skin, as it were, and to try to understand emotionally what the work is about.
Now, some of the adaptations you did were for Playhouse 90, the television series, television...
I did two
presentations
Faulkners
back in the 1950s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now you're doing things that are being broadcast on public television's American Playhouse. Do you think the ground rules have changed in any way?
Well, actually, American Playhouse is a very progressive, wonderful. I think it's unusual. Actually, the things that I did for the American Playhouse were first released theatrically in 1918 and on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Courtship will be released theatrically, but that was the one that had not been seen before. But they made both of those possible. They financed them on Valentine's Day and Courtship, and without their help, I don't think we'd ever made the films. And I think they more and more are helping out innovative and what I think is essentially very creative filmmaking.
Some of the plays in your 9-part cycle are set during the period of Reconstruction in the South, and in your introduction,
well, really late Reconstruction.
Okay, in the introduction to the new series of plays, you say that once when you were at home in Texas,
yeah,
you ran into a very old man, a black man,
mm-hmm,
who told you that he had worked on your great-great-grandfather's
mm-hmm
plantation.
Mm-hmm.
What did that make you think about? How did you feel?
Well,
when you told
as
about?
I said, I think I say in the introduction, I mean, it gave me a whole new perspective of what that meant. I mean, you know, I just had only had a vague kind of sense of what it meant to be a slave, and I certainly saw this human being, and I suddenly realized what a monstrous thing it must have been. And it wasn't a happy thought. I mean, it wasn't a happy experience to think that part of my family had been involved in that. But it was a reality and was something that I was grateful that I was able so young to understand the terrors of it.
You know, in a lot of ways, I think an experience like that would make some people want to leave home so that you wouldn't be seen as the great-great-grandson of a slave owner.
Well, I mean, where are you going to go? I mean, wherever you go, that's what that is what you are, and that's what you came from. And, you know, I mean, there were also many positive things around me, and people had made different adjustments to a really tragic time, because Reconstruction was difficult for everybody. And their lives were picked up, and they didn't dwell on that. And certainly my own father was a living example of, he was enormously close to black people. As a matter of fact, in one of the plays, it's about an experience of his when he lived with a black family as a boy of 12 or 13, and he was the only white person on the plantation. And he was so felt so loved and wanted that he wouldn't even go home for Christmas. So all that has a double side, you know. You just can't say, take one thing and say, well, that's ruined everything, because there are many compensating things that in the mix, so to speak.
Another of your plays, called 1918.
Mm-hmm.
Is about death by flu. It's during the flu epidemic in,
yep,
1918, and death by war, World War I.
Yeah.
Did you hear a lot of stories about both when you were growing up?
Well, yes, but more about the flu than about the war, really.
Well, families lost a lot of people during
the actually,
flu.
Well, actually, the flu epidemic killed more people than the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
And it was knew no boundaries. I mean, the people that the war couldn't get, I mean, women and children and kings and queens, the flu got. And it was a devastation. And I, in working on it, I thought it was interesting that actually I did the play first of all down at the HB, and when Herbert saw it, he said, you know what this play is about? And I often don't know what my plays are about, so I was happy to hear. And he said, this play is about expected death and unexpected death. And I thought about it for a moment, and I said, of course it is, because the expected death was what will happen if you go to France or to the war, and the unexpected death was the flu, which just quietly came into a house, and nobody was expecting it, and took people, killed them.
Mm-hmm. You know, talking about death reminds me of a line that's very moving from A Trip to Bountiful. It's one of Geraldine Page's lines. And in explaining why she wants to go back to the home she grew up in and that she raised her children in, she says that two of her babies are buried there.
Mm.
And it made me really think about the pull that the dead exert on you,
mm,
from the place where, you know, where your loved ones are buried.
Yeah.
Is that something you've thought about a lot?
Well, as a matter of fact, what has always haunted me is when I was growing up, and we often, because my grandfather's death, my grandmother often went out to the cemetery, and she'd take me with her. And there in the family plot were two graves of children of hers that had died as infants. And I constantly thought about them, and it was never mentioned, never talked about. I never even saw a picture of them. But there they were, and certainly the memory of them must have lived on in all these people, you know. And it's something that is, it does have its own reality for you.
You are still living part of the time in New York now?
Yes.
Do you feel alienated in cities? You seem so drawn to
small
towns.
No, I love
and rural
New York. I don't get to spend much time here. Actually, I'm only here now for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'm on my way again.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing a play at the Pittsburgh Public Playhouse this fall, and I go to Richmond tomorrow on Sunday to lecture, and so I wander around a lot, but. Oh, no, I think this is a great, great city, and I couldn't live in any other city in the world, really.
Okay. Before we run out of time, just tell us briefly about Convicts, the play that you're making into a movie with Robert Duvall.
Well, it's part of the 9 play cycle, and it's the second in the cycle, and it's a story, basically, of a young boy, a young white boy, who's living on a plantation, running a country store there for his uncle who's gone back to town. And it's a plantation worked by black convicts. And the plantation is owned by an old man of 78, who Robert Duvall will play, who is dying. And it's the relationship between this young boy and this dying old man is what the story basically is about.
Okay, well, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Horton Foote is working on producing all 9 plays in his Orphan's Home cycle for Public Television's American Playhouse. 4 of the plays were recently published by Grove Press. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.